Welcome to Apple Pie Playground, where we serve up slices of healing for the heart. Stay tuned for a journey of transformation back to the divine inner child. Can you come out and play today?
Welcome everyone to Apple Pie Playground. I'm your host, Valerie. It's so good to be on the playground this afternoon. And thank you, BBS, for being here with us. Let's dare our authentic selves to be out on the playground together today against the backdrop of what I call a game of Red Rover. When the line is really tough and you got to break free, but limiting beliefs kick in, right? Metaphorically, we'll talk about my least favorite game in just a bit, but let's start where we left off last week, and that is exploring the idea of higher consciousness as something of a transcendent experience. And it's explained by the way energies work all around us. So let's do that before we deal with the Red Rover traumas, okay? Have we heard of the postulation of what's called the reflexive universe? It's an idea coming out of the 1970s, and it's a philosophical view proposed by Arthur Young, which uses quantum mechanics as the basis for his theory about the manner of a conscious universe. And the idea suggests that reality is a closed loop in the mechanics of conscious creation, if you can imagine that. And this loop pushes out and pulls back in on itself, creating what's novel or what's newly learned, and then pulling what's already known into this novelty. And the idea is that reality bends back on itself or loops back around on itself to observe itself more consciously with every loop that it makes. And so we get models like a fourth dimensional sphere bending back into a third dimensional toroidal energy field and pulling what is in 3D into 4D as a vortex motion that's shifting energy into a higher dimensional rotation or loop. Right? Can you imagine that? That was just one example that was given by the lecture that we've been talking about. We talked a lot about a particular lecture from the Vesica Institute last week. That's just one example that was given. But we don't have to guess about that explanation, right? We know that the rhythmic field of the heart with its chambers is a double vortex that circulates energy in and out and creates an electromagnetic field, right? And so we are seeing this idea in real time. We feel it in the body. Right? We aren't finding our way into higher levels of consciousness willy-nilly, so to speak. And for the most part, we have physical attributes that we can feel and we can look to and we can understand as true, even as we build these really big, complex models. And we project those out into quantum mechanics, right? Does that make sense? We can use a set of natural laws intrinsic within the everything of all cosmic interactions. And the extraordinary thing is that we are completely unique in our co-creation practices within this aspect of cosmic interaction. Okay? You are completely unique in your co-creation practices, as am I, as is every single person on this planet. We're sovereign as creator beings in a cosmos of interactions. We are that free, that able to form reality at our own choosing. Isn't that extraordinary? And yet, we can't find our way to that kind of power most days, right? But it's how quantum mechanics can explain observation, or what we call setting intention, as the tool for manifesting in a physical realm because of what's called a dimensional reflexive feedback loop, bending back on itself. And that's what we just described. And it's connecting what would be with what has already been manifested as a matter of conscious creation and its own observation of itself. Okay, can we imagine that? The reflexive loop is self-referencing or self-observing and aware of the changes in its state, right? And Arthur Young called it a grand arc, where light descends into matter and then pulls self-knowing in as an integrative or reflexive process or loop, as the way the universe studies itself, the way God experiences itself. And it's basically a conscious creation feedback loop, friends. Does that make sense? Input and output are pathways formed by what creates consciousness, and that consciousness looks back to observe itself. So we create by observing the manifestation that looks back to see what has been created. Does that make sense? Let me give a couple of examples of how that works for us. Okay, we focus on our intentions to create a future reality by acting as if it is already manifested, which it is, as a spiraled reality, bending back in as the manifestation that comes to us, right? And we experience the higher self as being the part of us who already knows what we're learning and helps us to remember what we know that it already knows. Right? So those are two examples of reflexive reality. Okay, manifestation, and then the concept of the higher self guiding us. So do we see the extent of sovereignty required for those examples to occur the way they do? Do we see that requirement? In a cosmos where God, and that's whatever that is to us, right? Where God looks in on itself and what it's learning and helps itself remember what it already knows so it can build in more knowing and more experiencing. And it does that in each and every one of us as a vehicle of itself, right? as the mechanics of its own knowing. And that's extraordinary, isn't it? And Source lets us take the wheel, and we drive together to parts unknown, right? And that's just an extraordinary thing. So this is where our game of Red Rover comes in, okay? The strategy involved in the game of life that butts up against consciously choosing to be sovereign and responsibly co-creating as the cosmos expects us to be. And it can be really hard in a game where we're being sized up by everyone and every single thing around us, right? This game of life, this game of Red Rover that we're playing. Choosing to co-create from personal power is like a fairly tough game of Red Rover. Okay, when we got to break the line of limiting beliefs, and that means figuring out where the weak links are, doesn't it? Right? Red Rover, send Valerie right over. And that's where we are, breaking the barrier between the limitations of this physical realm and the freedoms of our true essence, as boundless as they are. And you know, we're getting pretty close to the climax of our human story in this age, friends. And I think we can all feel it. The energy that just radiates in. I mean, it is just full-blown energetics. And can we be brave enough to trust our place in a cosmos that makes us co-creators with duties to our sovereign spirits as a minute-by-minute journey and not just a someday event or a single occurrence that is growing with great anticipation? So if we were learning every day in small ways and in large ways too, how to integrate our God self beingness through all of the experiences coming our way, the lessons we're learning, the things we are observing, right? The choices we are making, the growth that we are creating for ourselves. What would we be like at the very, very, very end of all of those lessons? Have we ever thought about it? Where would we be at the very, very, very end of all of that training? Right? Have we thought about it? Now, we know that there's never an end. There's no end. However, we do know that humanity has experienced an extreme barrier, lots of barriers to our evolution of consciousness that could take us out to sensing the end of an age and the beginning of a true ascension point, right? And what would that be like at the end of everything we're trying to learn? You know, really, really think about what we could be at our greatest evolution, as far as we can see it. So, if there were a threshold for such things, we're getting close to it, friends. We are entering an experience of man most unlike other ages. Okay? And we've been here before. We've had some hits and some misses. It may be our very last round, okay? But we are entering a momentum of life force energies in the cosmos that resonate with nothing but our higher calling. What many might call our awakening, our rebirth, our transcendence, our deliverance, maybe. We are being called forth to participate in our spirit's integration with the expansion of a universal web of beingness into its next level in a multitude of ways. Can we see that? We are walking into the mystery of God evolving itself. And we are armed only with the preparations of the heart. And we go with what we got on. When you think about it, with what we know, with the strengths we've built, and the weaknesses we've babied along the way, whatever is us, whatever our progress and our peace, that's what goes. It's what decides the mystery as it unfolds for us. Right? And many of us are waiting for a single shifting event that catapults us into a new reality. And we're waiting for the next big thing to happen that changes everything. We're on the edge of our seat, expecting big things, earth-shattering things. When all of reality, every single bit of it, actually changes with every single little thought that we have and every single choice that we make, every single decision, right? These little things, friends, are as big as it can ever get. Our reality changes with every observation we make. And we bend time and space and a quantum of fields making those observations. And we share fields of reality along with lots of other folks doing the exact same thing that culminates in a shared reality. We pull in what will become reality as a fluid daydream with hardly any effort. Each lesson, each understanding, each heartbeat coaxes that ever-flowing reality. Because each and every one signifies the only thing that is true. Okay? And that is our present moment. Of all that we are and are capable of. And we needn't mourn the idea that we didn't do a better job yesterday at being kind, because there is no yesterday, friends. And we can't plan to be more loving tomorrow, because there is no tomorrow, friends. There are thoughts of tomorrow and memories of yesterday And both of them have us missing our now. And it's not a bad thing. It's just a choice of where we choose to reside, where our co-creation powers are focused. It's a now in which God emanates from each breath, right? Each heartbeat, that is the now where God lives. And waiting for a cosmic flash of spiritual expansion that makes us into higher beings is so, so, so exciting. It's so thrilling. But God doesn't wait to flash, friends. God doesn't wait. It beats with the heart and breathes in awareness as your heart and your awareness. And God offers compassion and kindness and love and light in the ever-present experience of your true self, your eternal now. The source consciousness of all beingness presses in for its opportunity to serve a magnanimous purpose. And what is that purpose? The source of all consciousness presses in to be one with us. To be one with us. With our hands and our hearts and our service, one to another. And friends, God doesn't wait to change the political system, to change the healthcare system, to change the education system. God doesn't wait to build a new earth. 'Cause, you know, God's been trying to do that since time immemorial, through us, for us, as us, friends. That's the name of the whole game. Do we understand? Do we realize the depth of what this moment holds, this one right now? Do we realize its expansiveness? Do we realize all that is contained within our perpetual natures in this present moment? And do we take every advantage to know ourselves as deeply? Choose to be evolved as if it is already true. Because it is, friends. We just can't conceive of that idea, maybe, just yet. And all of this is leading to my next comment. There's a reason why, maybe for many of us, that we can't necessarily yet conceive of these ideas. And maybe it's a reason embedded in the very thing we cling to the most. Maybe. Maybe the thing that gives us the most comfort, even as it creates the greatest fear and avoidance and striving. And I wonder, can we talk about it? What might enslave us by its own merits, friends? What might keep us just weak enough to be willing to wait for God to return to us instead of being ever present in a constant evolution of spirit? a continual joining of consciousness. So what takes away our sovereignty as a spirit's truest dignity and its only true state of being? And I want to use an example to keep the focus on an idea and not on an argument. And this example is an observation that I invite us to consider with great care, friends, for our hearts and our belief systems and the relationship that we've developed together. Do we know what holds us back in our lives, or what propels us forward? What makes us whole? Have we studied our lives and the beliefs that inspire our behaviors? Have we offered ourselves as much grace to look into ourselves that closely? Have we investigated in the luxury of how sovereignty feels to our spirit, to our mind, to our bodies? Are we free enough to be sovereign in the age of Aquarius? And I'm asking that to see if we are willing to test that idea. What do the teachings of sacred writings we might hold dear say about such things? What is salvation to us? What is it to our spirit? What is it to God's source being? What is salvation to us? And maybe we can think of it by framing that in a different question. Maybe we can frame that in a different way. What was it to the early biblical apostles of Christ, salvation, this idea? What was it to the apostle Paul? Do we know that in his evangelizing of what became written into the biblical gospel of Christ, the apostle Paul almost always, without fail, expressed our human condition in terms of slavery? The Bible records many, many times his sermonizing that we are, as humans, slaves to somebody, one way or the other, by our design, by what we are intrinsically, by who we are naturally, as a natural state. We are either slaves to sin, or we are slaves to righteousness. Now, did we know that the word slave, coming through the Greek as a translation, okay, through the Greek, is used at least 120 times in the New Testament, not the Old Testament, okay, in the New Testament? And Paul is recorded as saying that Christ purchased the freedom of man and claims ownership of the faithful. What is salvation, friends? as a lesson in our churches, but the exchanging of masters. The exchanging of one master for another. And, you know, why would it even matter as long as we're raptured? But friends, doesn't it matter? And so Paul is famous for saying that the Christian is both at the same time the Lord's freed man and Christ's slave, as a matter of righteous duty to God, as a matter of righteousness. And so this is a quote. In letters like Romans, Paul argued that people cannot save themselves or choose God by their own unaided fallen nature. Instead, the human will is bound to a desire for sin until God intervenes. Salvation depends on God's mercy rather than human will or effort. Now, let me reframe this idea in a very, very different way so that we don't feel picked on or disabused, which is not where we want to be together right now. There is a Buddhist sect that believes much the same way. And the Shinran Buddhists argue that human beings in this degenerate age of man are just too deeply bound by ignorance to achieve enlightenment through their own effort. Okay? And so, therefore, they too see a true decline in humanity's ability to save itself as spirits, as energy bodies, as transcending beings. And, you know, it can be argued that spiritual teachings reflect a wave of change in the nature of man as sovereign beings over time. And that wave of teaching looks outside itself for answers to connecting to source consciousness in an increasing way over the ages of a spiritual humanity. Because of beliefs that man cannot connect to his own source consciousness without an intermediary. Okay, but is there another way to see ourselves? A way that revives traditions of an inwardly focused salvation? Are we separated from our source or necessarily entangled with it? Can we not be what we observe ourselves as? And, you know, we might ask ourselves, is there in fact a way out of a metaphorically dark tunnel that gets longer and more harrowing with every religious doctrine composed by man? So please, please don't let me offend, friends. Is there light at the end of this tunnel that our religions are building? Or are we stuck in the dark, fixated on the fear of our spiritual failure instead of its inherent coaxing from the heart? And who of us would choose to remain inside the tunnel of another's making, even though it has an entrance and it has an exit. And it's true, friends, that we may never get out of a tunnel that is pitch black without the slit of light in the distance in front of us anywhere, if we never try to. But am I a slave to the dark, unable to find my way? Or does every step in one direction or the other move me into a better knowing? Can I not know the end of this tunnel if I keep learning which direction to walk? And will I not reach the end by my own steps in my own time unless I stand still and refuse any other option? All other impulses are going to move me forward, except stopping. And a slave cannot secure his own freedom being what he is, not by any knowing that he would possess, nothing he would learn, no amount of mental expansiveness, because his understanding takes no action. He must simply choose to become absolutely what freedom is, whatever that means to him, and act as a matter of his own sovereignty. Do we see that? Seek, friends, and you shall find absolutely all that you are. So, who would make us a slave to our own righteousness and never liberated, not even through Christ? And maybe this is the simple key to our game, Red Rover, friends, as a metaphor. In this day and age, deciding if we even want to play this game or not. Are we evolving into our sovereignty or into greater servitude? What is the master of a higher mind, of a co-creating heart, of a being that evokes a God self as part of the mystery of the cosmos? Where do we stand? How do we choose to play? And you know what? It's not for me to say, friends. It's not for me to say. All I know is quantum mechanics, as this methodology that we are learning to use right now in this time and space, teaches us one true thing at the very least. And that is, there are no masters in quantum mechanics. There are no masters in the natural world, the natural laws of a cosmos that we know of. There are only a finely coordinated expression of energies functioning on behalf of a cosmos that would know itself. Know thyself, friends. Be your own master. And this is called mastery. This is called mastery of the self that we are. I hope that made sense, friends. And not to offend anyone, please, please forgive me if I did. I so hope that we can have conversations that allow us to observe certain viewpoints and reflect on those with the capacity that we have to consider those things that we talk about. So I think it would be fun to do a quick supposal together that will set us up for something of a short expressive activity before we close today, so we're not closing on something of a heavy duty kind of conversation, because that was kind of heavy. And we walk through it together, and we'll take from it our own viewpoint. And our hearts will mull it over in its own way. We will take what was meaningful and we'll leave the rest. And I hope we always choose to do that together, friends. And it's what I love about us, that we can come together and chew on some things, as it were, and take what we will and leave the rest, and still love each other. And that's the important thing. So I'm wondering if we can sit for a minute in this little activity and observe what our minds might do in a particular scene that I want to share for us. I wonder if we can sit for a minute and do that. Let's create a scene, okay, where we are sitting in a coffee shop, having a nice cup of coffee with someone really, really great to be with. Can we imagine for just a minute what that scene would look like? Can we feel into it for just a minute? What would make us feel super comfortable sitting there? What would let our guards down most readily as we are sharing that cup of coffee? What would help us feel heard in our conversation and give us a sense that the time was enjoyable to the other person as much as it was to us? So let's just fill in the imagery here in this scene. How do we feel? What are we doing? What is our body language saying as we're watching ourselves sit there? Why do we enjoy this so much, this time we're spending with this particular person? Okay, do we have the scene in our mind's eye? So let's do a brief expressive play exercise with this scene. You want to? We may want to use our notebooks for this activity, but we don't especially need them today. We don't especially need pencil or paper. So we're just going to use our mind's eye and visualizing a little bit to walk us through this activity. It's a really popular activity, and I think we'll probably really like it. I thought it was super fun. It's super expressive. So let's stay with the coffee shop scene, okay? Let's start to fill in more details of our surroundings as we imagine what's taking place. Now, let's choose the person who is joining us for coffee. So choose somebody with whom you are in something of an intimate relationship, whatever that means to you, okay? And that means somebody with whom you can have meaningful discussions and with whom you may have very different kinds of conversations. All right? Do we have our coffee partner in mind? And you know, it may be that we might want to imagine having a first coffee with somebody we'd like to spend time with, but maybe we haven't yet. So feel free to practice a conversation with somebody you may want to sit down with in a conversation, but you just haven't yet. Okay, so the name of this exercise is called Temperature Check. And it's used a lot in relationship play. And the idea is that you have a cup, a coffee menu right in front of you. Okay, you have a coffee menu in front of you, as does the other person you're with. And on that menu, there are three different coffee choices you can order. And you're going to make your choice, and then your coffee partner will make their choice. And so each coffee suggests a specific piece of information to be shared between the two of you. Okay? You'll decide what information you'll ask your partner from the list. Right, depending on the coffee that you order. So here's the list of the coffees on your menu. First, you can order an espresso, which means I need to share a quick, direct, fairly intense truth with you, my coffee partner. Okay? Choosing an espresso means that you'll imagine sharing an intense truth with your coffee partner. Okay? Now, the next coffee choice on the menu is decaf. And so ordering decaf means I need a calm, relaxed talk with zero stress or problem solving. Right? I need a calm conversation. Right? Choosing a decaf coffee means you will imagine sharing a diversion of sorts with your coffee partner. Okay? And the last coffee on the menu is a latte, which means I am sharing something sensitive with you right now with a lot of emotion attached. All right, choosing a latte coffee means you'll imagine feeling safe enough to share an emotional idea or information with your coffee partner. Okay, so take a minute and choose which coffee you're going to order. Espresso is an intense truth that you'll share. A decaf is a lighthearted comment. Or a latte is an emotional topic that you may want to share with your coffee partner. And allow yourself to imagine how that sharing goes in your mind's eye. What do you need to share? Take a minute and visualize sharing with your coffee partner. Allow your visualizing to unfold. What is the conversation? What's the topic? How is it going? Are you able to visualize how your coffee partner will respond to what you're saying? Are you getting some insights through this conversation that you're having? Are you satisfied with the conversation that you are imagining in your mind's eye? There's a lot to think about here. Hopefully, maybe sometime this week, it would be kind of fun to sit down and rethink this conversation. And you can even visualize which coffee your partner might order and the conversation they might wish to have with you. So give it a try, see how it goes. I searched out this activity because of something of a popular visualization that's going around social media right now. And that's it's a thing now. And it's visualizing having a coffee, right? Having sitting down and having a cup of coffee with Christ. Okay, that's the thing going around social media right now. It's the thing. Is it possible for folks who idolize Christ to really enjoy that cup of coffee with him? And I am wondering what you think about that. Is that really possible? Would it be pleasant to have a cup of joe with somebody that we actually worshiped? Have we ever thought about that? What that would feel like? And we're not judging, we're just imagining and getting a sense of our feelings here, right? Could we truly be ourselves, our true selves, completely comfortable in the presence of someone we thought was specially different somehow than us? Somebody who was so very special and important and magnificent, somebody the heavens made greater than us. And let's think about that. And I mean, really, really think about it. How impossible a thing to consider that God could make anything greater or lesser than itself. Or would we rather engage a Christ who could sit down and have a coffee with us, who could have a really, really good conversation, who would listen to our point of view, who would lean in and look at us and understand where we're coming from? Can we even imagine complete comfort with such a man? Would we recognize our own beautiful spirit coming through? Would it magnify one heart to another? Could we find commonality? Could we feel like we were celebrated over that cup of coffee? Would we woo and faint and be afraid? Or would we get into the idea that it felt good to sit and be with somebody who feels so natural? What would it feel like for us to be considered maybe a friend or a brother or a sister, somebody worthy of time and attention from Christ? How good might it feel to be sought out for such a conversation, to be that important? So why don't we feel that important? Why can't there be two of us sitting there as Christs, imbued with natural, inherent, intrinsic Christ consciousness, Christos energies coming from a quantum field served by source consciousness itself. Both of us sitting there in that kind of energy, having coffee together. Maybe in a coffee shop full of Christ's sitting everywhere at every table. How about that, friends? Are we ashamed to consider such a thing? Is it improper or maybe vulgar to imagine that kind of thing in our mind? Doesn't it even integrate into our view of a higher dimensional experience? Doesn't it resonate on a deeper level of conscious awareness? That means we are experiencing equanimity in our relationships among all beings. And isn't that the resonance we're creating as we move from a controlled world of our current lives into the magic and extraordinary experience of feeling equanimity between sovereign spirits of a higher order? I mean, all of us of all sorts who are here in this place together, sharing the eternal together, who will come and go and experience time and space in different ways over and over again eternally throughout universes of incarnations together. I mean, can we think about it? For that to be true, isn't there an equanimity required? Moving ourselves from this physical realm of comparing and contrasting and separation into a higher realm of self, into a higher mental plane, into a place where spirits coexist in sovereignty and equanimity. Is it not necessary to consider these things as we evolve? Is it not a requirement of our own evolution? Is it not the way of natural law to move ourselves into equanimity and leave behind ideas like worship that may not belong in a realm shared by a cosmos of like hearts and sovereign spirits? And I hope it's something worth thinking about. I hope it's good food for thought, and that it fills us with wonderment and joy at its contemplation. And you know, it's my contemplation as much as it is yours, friends. And I want to thank you for daring thoughts like those. I want to thank you for staying with me and sharing a Sunday afternoon of supposals that may not be easy to consider. And it's so brave of you for trying. And I'm so grateful we could be together today. Thank you so much for coming along and coming my way. And I'm so grateful I could join you. But now, friends, it is time for us all to head home, I suppose, off the playground. Time to head home to BBS. And thank you so much for being here with us, BBS. We do love you. So until next time.
Time to head home, friends. Thanks for being a part of today's journey. We'll see you back on the playground next Sunday at 1 p.m. Central Time on bbsradio.com. Make sure to subscribe if you enjoyed the show. Find us on Telegram and X to share your insights on topics today. Your input heals the child in us all.